Caitlin Randall. 53 children at the facility in Midland County for unaccompanied migrants who crossed the U.S.-Mexico border have tested positive for COVID-19, about 11% of the 485 minors currently at the converted man camp, according to Mayor Patrick Peyton. The U.S. Health and Human Services Department has not provided details to local officials about the children who have tested positive, Peyton said in a phone interview. He said the department has said only that they're following CDC guidelines for quarantining. Quote, "The concern we have with that is if someone comes to pick the child up, as they're telling us they're going to, will they release that child, or will that child have to remain in quarantine until they're released?" Peyton said. HHS has said those with COVID-19 will remain in quarantine, according to Peyton, but he said he thinks that decision may change. It's also unknown to what extent positive cases at the facility will add to community spread, if at all. The minors are confined to the Cotton Logistics Man Camp southwest of city limits, but local officials don't know the protocols staff who come in contact with positive patients are following, Peyton said. He said he believes all federal staff are living at the facility. Officials said Monday that any children who require hospitalization will be transported to Midland Memorial Hospital. Teenagers are less likely to have severe cases of COVID-19 unless they have underlying health conditions. The HHS Office of Refugees Resettlement advised shelters last Friday to shorten quarantine periods to 7 days if unaccompanied children are tested within 48 hours before the end of quarantine and the test is negative, according to a report from Yahoo News. Children were previously required to isolate for 10 days with daily monitoring. HHS opened the shelter in Midland County on Sunday night under direction from the Biden administration to help alleviate overcrowding at border control facilities caused by a recent uptick in unaccompanied minors coming from Central America. Democrats defend Biden's lack of communication with local leaders. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. Two Midland County Democratic Party leaders stated local leaders are selectively criticizing the White House for its alleged lack of communication. Former Democratic Party Chairman David Rosen told a reporter Telegram in an email, quote, "I don't recall the Trump administration alerting county and city governments as they moved migrant children around the country," end quote. Current party chair Kathy Broderick also commented about the actions of previous administrations and that the federal government has a procedure for everything. Quote, "That was not my concern that local leaders didn't know about it," said Broderick, a former federal employee. Both talked about the problem at the border requiring an immediate solution. The Department of Health and Human Services began bringing juvenile migrants to a former man camp on Sunday night. Local officials said this week they expect around 700 total. Rosen, when asked about the migrant facility and the lack of communication with local officials, said his thoughts included, quote, "For the safety of the children, not alerting the populace, given the antipathy many here have for immigrants, it is the safe thing to do. It is the humane and decent thing to do. Remember the biblical imperative to welcome the stranger. These children are to be sheltered temporarily while being reunited with family and extended family around the U.S. Remember that most of our families were immigrants a few generations ago. There, but for fortune, go you or I," end quote. Broderick said that immigration is a political can that continues to be kicked down the road. She did say that, in retrospect, communicating with local officials should be part of the federal government's procedure and, quote, "why they didn't do that, I don't know," end quote. She also said she understands the "not in my backyard" attitude. Quote, "Most of America has that attitude," she said. Broderick is a former Big Spring resident, compared it to residents there not wanting to live next to prisons. Gilberto Hinojosa, chairman of the Texas Democratic Party, when asked about the facility in Midland and lack of communication with local leaders, emailed the following response to the Reporter Telegram this week. Quote, "The Biden administration is doing the best it can to pick up after Trump's failures," Hinojosa wrote. "The Trump administration left a backlog of migrants for nearly a year now, and that is when the influx of migrants began. However, the real failure at the border is the fact that Republicans would much rather vilify immigrants than own up to the fact that they are not getting aid to the people who need it. More than 45,000 Texans have died needlessly because of the failed Republican response to this pandemic. That is a fact we cannot be distracted from, and Texas voters will not forget it," end quote. The Midland County Elections Office reported that Biden collected about one of every five votes cast in Midland County. His 20% of the vote was the second highest for a Democratic Party candidate for president in Midland County going back to 2004. Broderick said, despite the numbers in Midland County, that elections have consequences and that, quote, "I had to suck it up during Trump. I guess that is what people will have to do these 4 years," end quote. Broderick said issues like the stopping of Keystone Pipeline and banning of new permits in New Mexico were part of the Biden campaign. She also has confidence in new Interior Department Secretary Deb Haaland to make logical decisions. Quote, "I don't see anything that the Biden administration has done that is detrimental to the Permian Basin," Broderick said. Dufford says Biden brought latest crisis to Midland. This is commentary by newspaper editor Stuart Doreen. "It's crisis situation again. Midlanders talk about returning to normal, but at this point, is it possible to even know what normal is? COVID economic downturn, negative oil online schooling, rioting at the U.S. Capitol, the coldest period in Midland's history, and now migrants." Quote, "I have 20 years of crisis in me," City Councilman Scott Dufford said, just after serving on the city council this 1 year, end quote. Dufford might be the lucky one of the group. He's the dean of the city council, the person with as much experience as the rest of the council combined. He's been a councilman during normal times. There are four members of the city council still waiting for their chance to govern. They came on the council in the first couple of months of 2020. Then COVID struck, and it all went downhill from there. During crisis mode, being proactive becomes tougher. Basically, their council experience can be summed up in a mask mandate conversation and not much else. Quote, "It makes me want to do it less," Dufford said about the last 12 months or so. "I have enjoyed 19 years of service on the city council, but the last year has not been enjoyable," end quote. "It would have been a difficult year even if the most recent crisis had not taken place, but it did. And this one does bother Dufford, an oil man by profession and political conservative by nature. The opening of a migrant facility in Midland by the Biden administration and not communicating with local officials was another straw. The first being the obvious executive order that paused new oil and gas drilling leases on federal lands, one that New Mexico Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham has warned the president will cause her state to lose even three-quarters of $1 billion over the next few years if it sees even a modest reduction in production, according to a report from the Associated Press. Quote, "This is an assault on the Permian Basin coming from Washington like I have never seen before," Dufford said. "This is being done to us for a reason," end quote. Is the Biden administration even worse than the Obama administration in his opinion? Oh yeah, he said. Quote, "It does seem like Obama was a walk in the park compared to these guys," Dufford commented. Dufford was one of many Midlanders that applauded after the mayor, quote, "nailed it this week" by calling out the White House for, quote, orchestrated attack against Texas and the basin, end quote. On Monday, Mayor Payton called the decision to open the migrant facility without communicating with local officials as, quote, the strangest, most backward, disrespectful thing I think I've seen in a long time, end quote. Dufford addressed the hundreds of juvenile migrants currently residing southwest of the city of Midland in a former man camp. He told the reporter Telegram, the situation isn't about the migrants, but the situation today's border crisis has put them in. What's next for the migrants, he asked. That's exactly what many people have asked. These humans have been used like pawns by any number of people, including, in some cases, bad actors like coyotes, gangs, and drug cartels. They have even been used as pawns for politicians in this country to win their game of border politics. Still, there are worries about what's next, because there is no best-case scenario for many of them. It is easy to understand what those frustrated in Midland are saying, because no one is talking about what's next for those migrants, no matter their age. What does the future look like for a 15 to 17-year-old in one of these trailers at the Midland Federal Facility? It's hard to believe that many of these unaccompanied minors know for sure. Crisis situation? Midlanders, like their leaders, are living it again and again, and each crisis is different than the next. The past 12 months are making the leaders, probably like the rest of the community, long for normal, or better yet, boring. They are ready to get back to business and do something they haven't been able to do for what seemed like an eternity for Dufford, govern.
Hello, this is Cindy continuing to read from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday. Number of vaccines administered in Midland tops 55,000. Midland Health reported Wednesday morning that the number of vaccines it has provided in Midland has topped 55,000. Midland Health showed that the 55,218 shots are 84.14% of those administered by Midland Health or transferred to other health entities. The Midland Health website shows 39,228 vaccines administered at the Horseshoe, 7,488 at Golf Course Church of Christ, and 6,149 to Midland Health employees. The rest were made in other locations, senior centers, nursing homes, and schools across the city. On Tuesday, there were 1,405 vaccines provided to people at the Horseshoe, 1,351, and Polo Park, 54. Overall, the number of vaccines administered by Midland Health in or outside Midland or transferred to other entities through Tuesday was 65,625. Vaccines this week, Monday, 1,722, Tuesday, 1,405. Positivity this week at Midland Health testing centers, total tests, 256, positive cases, 10, percentage through Tuesday, 3.8%, percentage last week, 5.8%. COVID patients in Midland Memorial Hospital, 15, percentage of total patients, 7%. Note, it is the fourth straight day that COVID patients made up 7% of total patients at MMH. Vaccination clinic at MLK Center by J.C. Lewis. Midland Memorial Hospital has teamed up with the Community Worship Center to host a vaccination clinic at the MLK Center, 2300 Butternut Lane. The vaccination clinic will be from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on March 27th. To schedule an appointment, call 432-221-4VAX and ask for an appointment at the MLK vaccine event on March 27th. The Community Worship Center will provide food and drinks during the clinic. Vaccinations will be performed by Midland Memorial Hospital staff. As of March 4th, Midland Health has administered at least a first dose of the Pfizer vaccine to more than 21,000 individuals. The self-reported racial makeup of these recipients are American Indian, 5.1%, Asian, 1.5%, Black, 43.6%, white 75.5%, unspecified 14.2%. The National Medical Association, NMA, is the largest and oldest national organization representing African-American physicians and their patients in the United States. The NMA created a task force to review outcomes in the black community. The task force identified persons receiving the vaccine were 94% less likely to develop COVID-19. Efficacy and safety were observed and consistent. Both the percentage and number of black people enrolled are sufficient to have confidence in health outcomes of the clinical trials. Most importantly, the NMA task force supports recommendations by the FDA to approve the emergency use authorization for the Pfizer vaccine.
Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, March 18th. Beverly R. Ward, age 75, of Midland, passed away on March 13th. She was born April 5th, 1945, in Fort Worth, Texas, and was raised in Midland. She graduated from Carver High School in 1963 and later became a licensed beautician. She is survived by her sisters, Beatrice Hawker and Sandra Woodson, and her brother, Clarence Witten, her daughters, Deshaun Witten and Brissandra Witten, and several grandchildren. Viewing will be on Friday, March 19th, from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pitkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Funeral services will be at New Jerusalem Baptist Church, 1801 North Carver Street in Midland, on Saturday, March 20th at 11 a.m. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Flowers may be sent to Llewellyn Garcia Pitkin Funeral Home and Chapel at 2508 North Big Spring Street in Midland, 79705. Funeral service is under the direction of Llewellyn Garcia Pitkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pitkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at www.llewellyngarciapitkinfh.com. Joseph Peter Serra III, age 82, of Midland, passed away on Monday, March 15th, at Midland Memorial Hospital. No public services are scheduled. Jody Leon Whitley, age 45, passed away on March 15th. Visitation will be held on Thursday, March 18th, from 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. at Stanton Memorial Funeral Home. Survivors include his wife, Christina Whitley, daughter, Amber Whitley, sons, John Whitley, Matthew Whitley, and two brothers. Funeral arrangements are entrusted to Stanton Memorial Funeral Home.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, March 18th, 2021. Texas leaders call on Russia for release. Pfluger, others demand release of Texas veteran. By Federico Martinez, FMARTINEZOAOA.com. A coalition of high-ranking Republican leaders, including U.S. Representative August Pfluger, R. Texas, on Wednesday demanded Russian authorities immediately release former U.S. Marine Trevor Reed, a 29-year-old Texan they say was sentenced in July to 9 years in a Russian prison under false pretenses. Pfluger, Representative Michael McCall, R. Texas, Representative Kevin McCarthy, R. California, and Senator John Cornyn, R. Texas, issued their strongly worded demand during a Zoom press conference from the U.S. Capitol. Trevor Reed, who is one of my constituents, was sentenced to a decade in prison after Russian authorities discovered he was a former U.S. Marine, Pfluger said. These were political charges, and we're demanding that the Russian government release him. Pfluger and McCall, the lead Republican on the House Foreign Affairs Committee, on March 3rd introduced a resolution calling for the release of Reed, who was born in Texas. The resolution was released with bipartisan support from 25 lawmakers and is now waiting for approval by the Congress and Senate. "We're here to demand justice for Trevor Reed," Cornyn said during the press conference. "We demand that he be freed." McCall added, "Reed is an American hero who was tried by a kangaroo court. The U.S. government will not tolerate this by the Putin regime. We will fight every day until Reed is free." Despite the bold words, the four Republican leaders acknowledged that besides political pressure, such as imposing trade sanctions, there is little else they can do to prompt Russia to free Reed. Cornyn and Pfluger said they are working with President Joe Biden's administration and the State Department to review options. During Wednesday's press conference, the four Republicans declined to answer whether they would consider a political prisoner swap with Russia. Trevor's parents, Joey and Paula Reed, participated in the press conference. They used the opportunity to plead with the Russian government to free their son. The Reeds said they had not heard from their son since March 2nd, when Trevor was transferred to a pre-detention center. According to the Reeds, Trevor traveled to Moscow in the summer of 2019 to study the Russian language and visit his Russian girlfriend and her family. Just days before he was scheduled to return home, he joined in a birthday celebration for his girlfriend, where he was drinking vodka. On a cab ride home, Reed began to feel sick and exited the vehicle. Another occupant became worried and called police for help in transporting Reed to the hospital, Joey Reed said. When police discovered Reed was an American, he was transported to jail instead. After questioning him about his prior military experience, police then claimed that Reed tried to hurt police officers while he was intoxicated. At his trial in July, the judge threw out video evidence showing Reed never assaulted officers. American media, which covered the trial, reported that the officers frequently changed their stories about Reed's arrest, which was met by the judge's laughter. "Our son is not guilty," Joey Reed said during the press conference. "We're not saying that because we're his parents. It was filmed by American media that showed the police lied and evidence was thrown out. All we're asking is for our son to have the same kind of fair trial a Russian citizen would receive." A delicious thank you. Odessa Fire Rescue's fire inspector, Kenneth Fletcher, left, assembles a plate of barbecue at a volunteer luncheon for those who helped with the Ratliff Mass Vaccination Clinic Wednesday at the Odessa Fire Rescue Central Station. Photo by Jacob Ford, Odessa American. Rotary Encore Feed honors COVID volunteers by Michael Bauer, MBAUER at OAOA.com. Thanking the volunteers and workers who helped make the mass vaccination clinics at Ratliff Stadium run smoothly, the Odessa Rotary Club and Encore put on a free lunch for those who helped at Central Fire Station Wednesday. Knowing that plenty of people put in the long hours to make the drive-through clinics work, Odessa Rotary Club member and project co-chair Rodney Hurt said they wanted to do something to recognize all who worked to help members of the community get vaccinated. "The Odessa Rotary Club wanted to do something nice for the volunteers at the vaccination center at Ratliff and for any healthcare worker from the front line who have put themselves in harm's way to come out and feed them lunch today," Hurt said. Hurt said the Odessa Rotary Club board of directors came up with the idea, and it wasn't long before they cooked up a barbecue meal that included pulled pork sandwiches, beans, and potato salad. "So we reached out to the Apollo Perforators, and they have this wonderful cooking trailer where we were able to cook," Hurt said, adding that they were aiming to serve as many as 200 people. It's not the first time that the Odessa Rotary Club has done a free lunch event for frontline workers and volunteers. Back in August, on the one-year anniversary of the Odessa Midland shooting, The Rotary Club also did a free lunch for first responders. That's what the Rotary Club is all about, Hertz said. It's about serving the community and anything that we can do. Preparations took a couple of days for the meals, according to Hertz. After getting the cooking trailer set up and doing a little grocery shopping, and we were all set to go, Hertz said. The guys have been working overnight to cook the pork. Hertz said they had about 10 to 15 volunteers helping to serve food on Wednesday. We just love and appreciate the people who have been involved this past year in helping others out, Hertz said. Whether it's as a volunteer at the vaccine station or as a nurse in the intensive care unit, putting their lives at risk to help others is a big deal. The workers who were recognized for their work were very thankful of the appreciation by the Rotary Club. It's an appreciation to us, Hector Frios, who works with Odessa Parks and Recreation, said. We needed to do the job and everything. It's great for them to show their appreciation for everything that we did for the community. During the drive-thru clinics, Rios said his job was to help set up tents along with tables and chairs, as well as anything else that needed to be set up. It was pretty tough, Rios said. It was a lot of work that we had to do, but we had to do what we had to do, and we were able to help everyone. Odessa Fire Rescue Training Captain Daniel Chavez was another person who was out at Ratliff helping things run on schedule and was thankful of the help from the volunteers. It's very nice of the Rotary Club to feed us and give us another extension of their gratitude, Chavez said. It wasn't just fire, but other organizations of the hospitals and our law enforcement. One big component was the volunteers out there. That was one of the more critical parts of this operation to make it work. If it wasn't for the volunteers, this never would have happened. Chavez's assignment out there was the operations section chief. It was basically a small part of the whole organization, Chavez said. I just made sure that everything was running like it was supposed to. If it wasn't, we would fix it. While Chavez added that there were plenty of small fires, figuratively, that had to be put out during the operation, he said he was pleased with how nice the public was during everything. They were very appreciative with us, Chavez said. They made us feel very good. At the end of the day, you're dragging your feet, but then you get that person that re-energizes you because you know that you're doing something good for the community. It goes a long way and further than people think. Director of Communications for the City of Odessa, Devin Sanchez, said it was good to see the first responders and frontline workers get the recognition that they deserve. There were also so many different departments and people in our city who made this work, Sanchez said. Our traffic department, our parks department, our street department, and the public information department. All of us had to work as a group to make sure that this worked, and then you add the extra level of volunteers. It was long days, and it was almost a 3-month process. It was a lot of work to do, but nobody ever thought twice about doing it. There was a call to action, and everyone stepped up and helped. Photo by Jacob Ford, Odessa American. Rudy Bow left and Jimmy Bow unwrapped pork shoulder for pulled pork sandwiches for a volunteer luncheon for those who helped with the Ratliff Mass Vaccination Clinic Wednesday at the Odessa Fire Rescue Central Station. COVID app offers local numbers. Vinu Yankarla speaks with the media about the development of the COVID in the Basin app during a press conference about its release Wednesday morning at the Odessa Chamber of Commerce. Photo by Jacob Ford, Odessa American. By Federico Martinez, FMARTINEZ at OAOA.com. Community leaders on Wednesday unveiled a COVID in the Basin app that will give Ector and Midland County residents instant access to a treasure trove of local and state COVID-related information. A demonstration of the free app, which can be downloaded through Apple and Android app stores, was presented during a press conference at the Odessa Chamber of Commerce. The app can also be downloaded by visiting www.covidinthebasin.com. COVID has been around for just over a year in our region. Odessa Regional Medical Center Chief Medical Officer Dr. Rohit Saravanan said during the press conference, "This past summer, we began to look for a singular source of information. We wanted to develop something where people could go and verify what they saw on Facebook. That's how this was really born. The app draws its information from credible sources such as the CDC, WHO, and NIH," Saravanan said. "What makes the COVID in the Basin app unique is a focus on providing localized information to residents," said Saravanan, one of several local healthcare officials who helped design the app. "Residents can use the app to quickly find out where they can get tested, vaccinated, or treated, and related costs," Saravanan said. "It also provides links to COVID-related news provided by local media like the Odessa American," he added. The app, which provides information in English and Spanish, was created by Venu Yankarla, a local software engineer. The creation of the app was paid for by private donors. During his demonstration, Yankarla showed how easy the app is to use. A simple menu allows users to select from a variety of topics, such as where vaccines are available. A quick click lists all locations in Odessa and Midland where vaccinations are being offered, if there is any cost, and the current vaccine supply available at each site. Links to register for an appointment are included if available. Updated weekly statistics of COVID-related deaths, rates, and test results are provided on the app homepage, Yankarla said. Saravanan said the Odessa Chamber of Commerce and City of Odessa's political support of the project played a major role in the effort. "Because the app has COVID information, we couldn't just put it up," said Saravanan, who noted app providers like Apple have strict guidelines in place because at one point they were inundated with apps that provided dubious and outright incorrect information. "We asked the city to back this up, and they did. ORMC will update the information provided on the app weekly." City Manager Michael Barrero said the city was eager to support a project that helps provide accurate information to residents. He noted that during the past year, hospitals like ORMC and Medical Center Hospital, various city departments, and other organizations have worked together closely to address COVID. "The city has been involved in everything we can do to combat this deadly disease," Marrero said. "We felt it was important to be able to go to one site and get relevant information. We think it's a great tool for our citizens. We're on a great trajectory. COVID rates in Odessa continue to decrease, but we're not out of the woods yet." Wesley Burnett, Director of Economic Development for the Odessa Chamber of Commerce, said the app can be a useful tool for local businesses to help them monitor COVID rates locally. A photo by Jacob Ford, Odessa American. Venu Yankarla demonstrates how to use the COVID in the Basin app during a press conference about its release Wednesday morning at the Odessa Chamber of Commerce. "Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, March 18th, 2021, local. Local news roundup. Fish fry drive-through. The newly formed Knights of Columbus Council number 17679 has scheduled a drive-through fish fry from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. Friday at Holy Redeemer Catholic Church, 2633 Conover Avenue. Plates are $12 each. Drive-through only, no dining in. Visit tinyurl.com/466SCYZV. Gun Expo. Silver Spur Trade Show has scheduled the Gun and Blade Show from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday and from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Sunday at the Ector County Coliseum, Building G, 4201 Andrews Highway. Admission is $7 for adults or free for 12 and under, $1 off NRA/TSRA or military with ID. All law enforcement free with their badge. Cash only. Visit www.silverspurtradeshows.com/home. Spring cleanup. Keep Odessa Beautiful has scheduled Don't Mess With Texas Trash Off spring cleanup through April 23rd. Families, groups, businesses, and individuals are invited to register at keepodessabeautiful.org/DMWT. A volunteer appreciation luncheon will be announced at a later date. Volunteers needed. The Crisis Center of West Texas is offering a free training for community members interested in serving on the Crisis Response Team. Trainings will be held on Saturdays, March 20th, March 27th, April 10th, and April 17th in the UTPB Mesa Building Game Room. Volunteers are essential to the CRT and provide essential response services to survivors of domestic and sexual violence immediately after an assault occurs. Volunteers are required by the Texas Attorney General to complete a training course and 10 hours of shadowing. This course will cover the dynamics of sexual and domestic violence, trauma-informed care, and other tools that will help you support survivors. Members of the CRT volunteer for overnight and weekend shifts based on your availability on a rotating basis. To volunteer, complete application online at tinyurl.com/3dbfra8s. For more information, email Elizabeth Texera at elizabeth@ccwtx.org. OANews@OAOA.com. District looks to keep full funding. OANews@OAOA.com. Superintendent Scott Murray told Ector County ISD board members the district won't lose state funding for the 2,000 or so students missing from last year to this year, but there are strings attached. In his legislative update, Murray said Texas Education Commissioner Mike Morath made the decision recently to allow school districts to be held harmless for enrollment and attendance drops during the pandemic, the board recap said. This means ECISD will not lose the funding for the 2,000 or so students missing from last year to this year. Murray added that there will be stipulations for receiving this money, and it means about $8.5 million to ECISD. From the federal level, Murray said the first round of CARES Act funding benefited ECISD, which received money directly from the state and nearly $1 million combined in CARES funding from the City of Odessa and Ector County for technology purchases for students, the recap said. Two additional rounds of CARES Act funding has been approved to provide to states for education, which could mean about $25 million for ECISD that is currently sitting in state coffers and potentially another $75 million earmarked for ECISD, the recap said. This money is designated from the federal government to address students' learning loss over the next few years, Murray said. During Tuesday's board workshop, Murray said there are ongoing legislative discussions about how money will be distributed to school districts, as the state may use it to replace regular school funding, called supplanting. Murray said he testified before the Congressional Committee on Education and Labor during spring break And we'll be meeting with state leaders in Austin next week to talk about this topic. He said federal money earmarked for school districts should go directly to school districts and not be used to supplant regular funding from the state of Texas, the recap said. Data now shows significant amounts of work will be needed to help students overcome the learning loss students have experienced since the pandemic started 1 year ago. Murray said maintaining the same level of funding for education will not produce the necessary results, the recap said. On another item, trustees heard a presentation on adding sixth grade to Austin Montessori Magnet. Murray said the proposal will be brought back to the board next week for a vote. Principal Tanya Haygood said if approved, sixth grade would start next fall. Currently, Austin Montessori is a pre-kindergarten, three-year-old through fifth grade model with three levels: early childhood, PK3, PK4, and kindergarten. Elementary 1, first, second, and third grade. Elementary 2, fourth and fifth grade. Supplemental agenda material says adding sixth grade will allow students to have a culminating year of Montessori and will provide students an opportunity to complete the final three-year Montessori cycle. An interest survey was shared with current fifth grade families, and data shows that 80% of fifth grade families prefer to stay at Austin for their sixth grade year, the material said. A parent meeting will be held with fifth grade students to communicate options, and current Austin families will reserve their seat by completing the Schools of Choice Intent to Return form, the material says. Haygood said the campus has about 450 students and 23 teachers. This would add up to 50 students. The campus previously had sixth grade, so Haygood said space won't be a problem. Trustees also heard a presentation from the Guidance and Counseling Department, which provides a full range of support for students, from college and career advice to mental health and crisis support to social-emotional learning. The recap said they do this with a team of 88 counselors assigned across the district's 43 schools. In the first semester, ECISD counselors conducted more than 5,000 sessions/contacts with students and families. The department is active on social media using YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter to provide resources and other support. Social-emotional learning is an immediate priority of the strategic plan. ECISD used a student connectedness survey in the fall and will use it again before the end of the school year, the recap said. Overall, students in ECISD elementary schools express a good level of connectedness, measured in engagement, rigorous expectations, school climate, and sense of belonging. Students in middle and high schools rate those areas lower, the recap said. Guidance and Counseling provides professional development on social-emotional learning for all ECISD staff. This work, along with emphasizing mental health awareness plus college, career, and military readiness for every student, are the next areas of focus for counselors, the recap said. The board also got an update from the Talent Development Department. Talent development has three areas of focus: creating, expanding talent pipelines, outlining career pathways, and guiding professional learning. Many avenues exist for teachers to hone their skills, become mentors and team leaders, and earn more money without leaving the classroom, the recap said. Executive Director of Talent Development, Ashley Osborne, said the district would have a teacher earn a six-figure salary in the near future. She used the example of a middle school math teacher with 10 years of experience with a master's degree, who is a multi-classroom leader, an opportunity culture role, and earns a teacher incentive allotment designation as one who would top $100,000 in a particular year, the recap said. On another item, in his opening remarks, Murray said ECISD now has about 71% overall of its students back to face-to-face learning. On the net, HectorCountyISD.org. Superintendent to present State of the District. OA News at OAOA.com. Hector County ISD Superintendent Scott Murray will present the State of the District address at 7 p.m. tonight. The address will be broadcast over the district's Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube platforms. Murray will highlight ECISD's accomplishments over the previous year, a year with many unexpected challenges, yet many opportunities to grow within those challenges, a news release said. On a separate item, Saturday evening, Odessa High School and Permian High School will renew their rivalry on the baseball field at 7 p.m. at Midland's Momentum Bank Ballpark, home of the Midland Rockhounds. In conjunction with the game, it is ECISD Employee Appreciation Night, and ECISD employees can get into this game for free with their work ID badge. On the net, facebook.com/HectorCountyISD. Landgraf back on air at CBS 7. OA News at OAOA.com. A familiar face will be returning to the desk at CBS 7. Veteran broadcaster Shelby Landgraf will be returning from hiatus and has been named the CBS 7 interim news director and co-anchor of the 5 p.m. and 6 p.m. newscasts with Jay Hendricks, a press release by CBS 7 stated. Landgraf joined the CBS 7 team in 2017. She graduated from Trinity University with a bachelor's degree in speech communication and business administration before diving into broadcast journalism. Landgraf has lived in different parts of the world, graduating from high school in Germany, and has given back to the community, serving on the West Texas Food Bank Board of Directors, as well as the John Ben Shepherd Public Leadership Institute Advisory Board. For more information about Landgraf and the CBS 7 team, visit cbs7.com. 411 days. For 411 days, the city has fought a lawsuit brought by the Odessa American to enforce the state law that guarantees the public's right to see basic police records. Through January 6th, the city has spent $112,138.47 of taxpayers' dollars to fight releasing information on crime in Odessa. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Hector County, 16,473 total cases, 345 deaths. Midland County, 16,788 total cases, 256 deaths. Texas, 2,737,763 total cases, 46,651 deaths. U.S. cases, 29,174,758 total confirmed, and 534,099 deaths. Find out more at covidinthebasin.com or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. COVID-19 vaccines. Medical Center Hospital is administering COVID-19 first dose Pfizer vaccines from 9 a.m. to 8:30 p.m. Monday through Friday, and from 10 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. Saturday and Sunday at MCH urgent care locations at 3001 JBS Parkway and 6030 West University Boulevard. Vaccines are for Phase 1A frontline workers and residents at long-term care facilities, and Phase 1B most at risk for ages 65 and older. No appointment is necessary and walk-ins are welcome. Vaccines are free of charge while supplies last. Visit mchodessa.com/coronavirus. Odessa Regional Medical Center, 520 East 6th Street, is administering COVID-19 vaccines. Vaccines are free of charge while supplies last. To check on availability or to make an appointment, call 432-582-8549 or visit www.odessaregionalmedicalcenter.org/vaccine. ORMC will contact those who received the first dose Pfizer dose at Ratliff to set their second/booster shot appointment. Walgreens has limited COVID-19 vaccines available in select areas. For eligibility requirements or more information, visit tinyurl.com/YHR6NEUD. AGV pharmacies are administering the COVID-19 vaccine based on state and federal eligibility guidelines in select areas. To sign up, updates, or information, visit vaccine.hev.com. The CVS stores are administering the COVID-19 vaccine by appointment only in select stores based on local eligibility guidelines. For guidelines, to schedule an appointment, or for more information, visit cvs.com, CVS Pharmacy app, or call 800-746-7287. Walmart and Sam's Club pharmacies are administering the COVID-19 vaccine based on state and federal eligibility guidelines in select areas. For guidelines, to schedule an appointment, or for more information, visit www.walmart.com/CP/1228302 or www.samsclub.com/pharmacy. From staff reports. Closing prices. Posted $61.08. Futures $64.60. Natural gas $2.528. Benchmark U.S. fell 20 cents to $64.60 per barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of...
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 50 and clear. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low in the upper 50s. Then tomorrow, cloudy with a high in the upper 60s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the mid-50s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Local news roundup. Socorro man dies in rollover. A 24-year-old man from Socorro died in a single vehicle rollover in northeast Odessa. The reported fatal rollover happened at 12:55 a.m. March 24th near the intersection of Highway 191 and Billy Hext Road, an Odessa Police Department press release stated. Investigation reportedly showed that Aaron Zepeda, 25, of Socorro, was driving a 2016 Jeep Patriot East in the 6800 block of East Highway 191 and left the roadway before rolling over. Zepeda was pronounced dead at the scene and next of kin have been notified. The cause of the crash is still under investigation. Police searching for man involved in theft. The Odessa Police Department is reportedly looking for a man who stole $80,000 from a victim over a 9-month period. OPD has released a photo of the man that can be seen at tinyur.com/2UEWVP35. Anyone with information about the theft is asked to contact Detective L. Gonzalez at 432-335-3345 or Odessa Crime Stoppers at 432-333-TIPS, T-I-P-S, and reference case number 19-0035479. Woman charged with stealing nearly $15,000 from an elderly woman. A 64-year-old woman was arrested after she reportedly passed numerous forged checks that totaled nearly $15,000. Candy Brown Johnson was charged with exploitation of an elderly person, a third-degree felony. Johnson reportedly befriended an elderly woman to gain unauthorized access to her home, funds, and resources. Johnson stole numerous checks from the elderly person, forged them, and passed them all, made payable to herself, with a total amount of $14,915 between June 2020 and August 2020. Documentation and witness statements show that Johnson intentionally and knowingly caused an unauthorized loan and vehicle purchase to be obtained in the elderly woman's name in March of 2020, the affidavit stated. Documents also showed that Johnson used the elderly woman's security bank account information to make an unauthorized debit transaction to pay her own Verizon bill. Johnson also reportedly passed the elderly woman an insufficient funds check with the amount of $6,975, which was reported to be a repayment for personal loans that Johnson asked the elderly woman to give her. Johnson was booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center at 8.06 a.m. March 24th, jail records show. She had one bond totaling $8,000, and she posted bail on March 24th. OA News at OAOA.com. Coming down. Construction workers in a suspended platform on the Prosperity Bank building worked to remove the CBS 7 sign Wednesday morning in downtown Odessa. Photos by Jacob Ford, Odessa American. West Texas Oil and Gas Convention. Photos by Eli Hartman, Odessa American. Top. Convention goers wait in line for food and look at various types of oil field equipment at the Roseland West Texas Oil and Gas Convention Wednesday morning at the Midland Horseshoe Arena. The Roseland Oil and Gas Convention will run through today from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. Above left, Vice President of Extreme Manufacturing, Don Schultz, left, shows President of Eastern Services, Brad Kincaid, a video on his phone at the Roseland West Texas Oil and Gas Convention Wednesday morning at the Midland Horseshoe Arena. Above right, Mondeo scaffolding and shoring salesman Greg Hubbard, second from left, and sales manager Todd Martin, third from right, show convention goers a trench shoring box at the Roseland Oil and Gas Convention Wednesday morning at the Midland Horseshoe Arena. Spelling Bee is today at OHS. Special to the Odessa American. The Scripps Regional Spelling Bee will take place from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. today in the old auditorium at Odessa High School. There is no admission fee and masks are required. Chris Bartlett is the pronouncer and Jamie Miller is the organizer. The Regional Bee winner qualifies to compete in the National Bee. Campus Spelling Bee winners. Elementary winner Tommy Garcia is a fifth grade student at Compass Academy Charter School. He is the son of Tommy and Myrta Garcia. He likes to play basketball, football, and video games. Secondary winner, Bella Carrasco, is a 7th grade student at Compass Academy Charter School. She is the daughter of Gerardo and Veronica Carrasco. When she is not busy with school, she likes to play volleyball. Shijay Sivakumar is a 7th grade student at Bowie Middle School. He is the son of Simakumar Subramani and Jayanthi Naidu. Shijay likes to read, play basketball, and watch football. Raul Garcia is an 8th grade student at St. John's Episcopal School. He is the son of Rolando and Amy Garcia. Raul likes to play chess, guitar, and video games. Ajay Gundlapalli is a 5th grade student at Reagan Magnet Elementary School. He is the son of Sai Gundlapalli and Meghana Galala. He enjoys playing tennis, chess, and reading books. Aiden Hinojos is a 5th grade student at Travis Magnet Elementary School. He is the son of Mayra Hinojos and Jose Hinojos. He enjoys playing video games and completing math problems. Janard Karai is a 2nd grade student at Haley Home School. He is the son of Bernard and Jalen Karai. He likes to read books and watch television. Kanishk Yankarla is an 8th grade student at Nimitz Middle School. He is the son of Banu Yankarla and Kavitha Yankarla. Kanishk likes solving Rubik's cubes, playing chess, and drawing cartoon characters. Local news roundup. Shrimp Fest online auction. Ellen Noel Art Museum has scheduled Shrimp Fest online auction Friday through Sunday. Bid to win travel, wine, party, golf, and children's packages, jewelry, and more. Proceeds help fund the museum mission to continue to provide quality art exhibitions, educational programs for all ages, free community art day, and much more to the Permian Basin. To bid, visit http://bid-pal.net/shrimpfest2021. For more information, visit noelartmuseum.org. Concert. Casting Crowns will be part of the Drive-In Theater Tour Series at 7 p.m. Friday at Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, 1310 North Farm Road, 1788, Midland. For tickets or more information, visit wagnernoel.com. Exhibition, Ellen Noel Art Museum, 4909 East University Boulevard, is honoring Women's History Month by opening exhibition Women Artists, 4 Centuries of Creativity from the Reading Public Museum through May 30th. Museum hours are noon to 5 p.m. Tuesday through Sunday and noon to 8 p.m. on Thursdays. Admission is free. Call 432-550-9696 or visit noelartmuseum.org. Spring cleanup. Keep Odessa Beautiful has scheduled Don't Mess With Texas Trash Off spring cleanup through April 23rd. Families, groups, businesses, and individuals are invited to register at keepodessabeautiful.org/DMWT. A volunteer appreciation luncheon will be announced at a later date. OA News at OAOA.com. This is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, March 25th, 2021, obituaries and death notices. Harold Lee Ray, Ray is spelled R-H-E-A. Odessa, Harold Lee Ray, 78, of Odessa, Texas, passed away on March 12th, 2021, at his home in Odessa, Texas. Harold was born on February 11, 1943, to Pompey and Justina Rumsey Ray in Tahlequah, Oklahoma. He married Dorothy Janice Beam on April 12, 1963, in Odessa, Texas. He was greatly loved and will be sorely missed by those who knew and loved him. He is survived by his spouse, Dorothy Janice Ray, of Odessa, Texas, two children, Dean Lee Ray, Rhonda, and Tina Seymour, five grandchildren, five great-grandchildren, brother Jerry Ray, Karen, sister-in-law Ann Mackey, brother and sister-in-law Beverly and Donnie Wren, and numerous nieces and nephews. He is preceded in death by one grandson, Justin Seymour, his parents, Pompey Wright and Justina Rumsey Ray, and one brother, Pompey Ray. A graveside interment will be held on Saturday, March 27th, 2021, 11 a.m. at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory. Evelyn Ann Brown Jenkins, Brownwood. Ann Jenkins, beloved mother, grandmother, and great-grandmother, went to be with the Lord on Monday, March 22nd, at her home in Brownwood, Texas, at the age of 85. Ann was born in Bloomfield, Missouri, on June 23rd, 1935, to Hazel and Frank Brown. Ann grew up in Bloomfield and attended William Jewell College, where she met and married Carl Allen Jenkins. Ann and Al transferred to Ole Miss, where Ann was a member of Alpha Delta Pi sorority and graduated with a BBA. Ann was preceded in death by her parents, her sister Jean, and her husband Al. Ann is survived by her son, Carl Allen Jenkins Jr., and wife Jolie of South Padre Island, daughter Alyssa Gwaites and husband Dr. James Gwaites of Odessa, sister-in-law Dorothy Burley of Lafayette, Louisiana, five grandchildren and six great-grandchildren. Visitation will be at Heartland Funeral Home in Early, Texas on Friday, March 26th from 6 to 8. Graveside services will be Saturday, March 27th and 2 p.m. at Sunset Memorial Gardens, Odessa, Texas. Donnie Williams of The Bridge, Odessa, will be officiating. Memorials may be made to the charity of your choice. Condolences, memories, and tributes can be made to the family at www.heartlandfuneralhome.net. Death notices. Petra Subia Armendariz, Odessa. Petra Subia Armendariz, 88, died Sunday, March 21st, 2021, in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Ramon Ontiveros Mancha, Midland. Ramon Ontiveros Mancha, 101, of Odessa, died Sunday, March 21st, 2021, in Midland. Mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m., March 26th, 2021, at St. Anthony's Catholic Church. Burial to follow on Saturday, March 27th, 2021, at 11 a.m. in Presidio, Texas. Father Chavez is officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Manuel P. Rodriguez, Odessa. Manuel P. Rodriguez, 63, died Wednesday, March 17th, 2021, in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa.
Hello, this is Cindy, continuing to read from the Odessa American for Monday. Month of Giving. The West Texas Food Bank is joining forces with two Jersey Mike's Subs restaurants located at 7270 East Highway 191 in Odessa and 4400 North Midland Drive in Midland for the 11th annual March Month of Giving campaign to fund local charities. During the month of March, customers can make a donation to the West Texas Food Bank at these Jersey Mike's locations. The campaign will culminate with Jersey Mike's Day of Giving on March 31st, when the local Jersey Mike's restaurants will give 100% of the day's sales, not just profit, to the West Texas Food Bank. Visit Jersey, J-E-R-S-E-Y, Mikes, MIKES.com.
Does loss of optic nerve occur? Dear Dr. Roach, you recently wrote a column on taking high blood pressure medications later in the evening, specifically near bedtime. It is my understanding that some people's blood pressure will drop so low in this situation, the perfusion pressure to the optic nerve will be insufficient. This can lead to glaucoma-like atrophy of the nerve, potentially leading to loss of function. If one is best served with late evening high blood pressure medications, then it seems careful follow-up to determine if loss of optic nerve is occurring should be recommended. K.S. Answer. You are correct that dropping the blood pressure too quickly can limit blood flow to the brain, and the retina is in fact brain tissue with the same potential for injury. However, the medicines for high blood pressure in common use now do not suddenly drop blood pressure to the point where there is a risk of damage to the tissues. The brain has a very highly developed ability to maintain blood flow across a wide range of blood pressures. Importantly, the trial that has provided evidence to nighttime blood pressure medicine showed a decrease in stroke risk by half. Although the optic nerve itself was not evaluated in the study, the better control of high blood pressure outweighs any potential risk of too low blood pressure. Regular eye exams in a person with high blood pressure are recommended, no matter when medication is taken. To your good health, Dr. Keith Roach. Roach's column appears Tuesdays through Saturdays. Readers may write him at P.O. Box 536-475, Orlando, Florida, 32853-6475.
This is the Dear Abby column that appeared in the Midland Reporter Telegram on Thursday, March 25th. Widower fears impotence will kill new relationship. Dear Abby, I am a faithful male reader of your column. I lost my beautiful wife of 40 years last year. During our marriage, I had prostate cancer and decided to have the surgery to remove it. I was told by my doctor there was a chance I would never again be intimate with my wife, and she was okay with it. Now that she's gone, I have grown close to her childhood best friend. I don't know whether a relationship is in the making, but I'm afraid once she finds out I'm unable to perform, the relationship will die. I have tried every pill on the market, pump, etc. Is it possible to have a good relationship with someone without intercourse? Or do you think I'm doomed? Signed, Going Forward in Virginia. Dear Going, I do not think you are doomed. If you are under the impression that all women of your age and younger would reject you because you can no longer have sexual intercourse, allow me to reassure you. Many women would value warmth, affection, compatible ethics and morals, and an intellectual equal to share their life with. So be honest, and you may be pleasantly surprised to discover that not only are you eligible, but that you are also in demand. Dear Abby, I have a friend who is really popular. We have been best friends since third grade, but when we started ninth grade, she really changed. She started hanging out with the cool kids and acting weird. She told me that because I was her friend, I had the automatic right to hang out with them. I don't like to hang out with large groups of people because I'm afraid of big groups, but I still want to be friends with her. When I told her I'd think about it, she suddenly turned cold. I'm confused. I don't know what I should do. She was there for me since third grade, and I was there for her, and now she seems to be fading really fast. 6 years of friendship just forgotten. Please give me some advice. Signed, Friend Drama in Michigan. Dear Friend Drama, sometimes when a person says, I'll think about it, it comes across as a negative reply. Your friend's feelings may have been hurt because she interpreted it as a rejection. it would have been better if you had explained that you are uncomfortable in large groups and would prefer to see her one-on-one if she was willing. It may not be too late to get that message across to her. If the price of her company is that you will have to learn to be more social, you will then have to decide which is more important. Dear Abby, I have a coworker who just built a house. When I asked her what she would like for a housewarming gift, she told me a nice wine carafe with a stopper. So that's exactly what I got her. I recently found out she had a housewarming party, and I wasn't invited. I had asked her when it was going to be, and she didn't mention a word about it. Am I still obligated to give her the gift I got for her, or should I write her off and give it to someone else? Signed, Excluded in Corpus Christi. Dear Excluded, ouch, write her off and re-gift it.
Horoscope. Happy birthday for Thursday, March 25th, 2021. Entrepreneurial, passionate, and direct. Expressing your creative voice is high on your priority list. This year, you connect with artistic groups through the magic of technology without sidestepping professional obligations. Continue to keep a watchful eye on your finances. When life gets tough, your optimism infects those around you. If single, online dating sites may intrigue you. If attached, carve time in your schedules for romantic date nights. Sagittarius challenges you. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5, dynamic. 4, positive. 3, average. 2, so-so. 1, difficult. Aries, March 21st through April 19th. 3 stars. Today, share spare time with a friend who makes you laugh and smile. Avoid religious and political topics. Try walking, biking, dancing, or any other physical activity that you can enjoy doing together. Tonight, send family a photo collage. Taurus, April 20th through May 20th, 5 stars. A piece of furniture or decorative art may tempt you to overspend. Watch your impulses. What you love today, you might not like tomorrow. Show your family in words and action how much you appreciate them. Tonight, answer texts and email. Gemini, May 21st through June 20th. 4 stars. Catch up on reading. If the sun is shining, take your book or device outside. Return communication you may have forgotten about. Meet up with friends who love stimulating conversation and a friendly debate about hot topics. Tonight, vegetarian meal. Cancer, June 21st through July 22nd, 4 stars. Walk where you can smell fresh flowers. They may remind you to buy a bouquet for your home or office. Treat yourself to a frivolous item that won't impact your finances, but you will enjoy. Tonight, start a mystery novel. Leo, July 23rd through August 22nd, 5 stars. Pat yourself on the back. A project you have been working on will reach its conclusion. Attend a gathering where you can network with people whose interests mirror your own. An important contact might emerge. Tonight, an emotional discussion brings closure. Virgo, August 23rd through September 22nd, 3 stars. Today might bring vacillating moods. Excuse yourself politely from an appointment and take alone time. Your imagination may be especially active. Catch up on journal entries and jot down creative ideas you want to run by your team. Tonight, dance movements. Libra, September 23rd through October 22nd, 4 stars. Plan to visit a friend who lives out of town. In the meantime, set a time to connect online. Someone you did a favor for may write a note that could bring a tear to your eye. Tonight, calm your nerves. Scorpio, October 23rd through November 21st, 3 stars. Expect the unexpected in all areas of life. Your career may take a surprising new turn. Adapt to current trends, and you will fit right in. Stay focused and continue to be a team player. Tonight, add to your playlist. Sagittarius, November 22nd through December 21st. 4 stars. Someone might ask you to mentor them. Accept the challenge. You may discover teaching skills you doubted you had. Talk to people from other cultures. Learn a language online through lectures and recordings. Tonight, dinner will be waiting for you. Capricorn, December 22nd through January 19th, 5 stars. Today, you want to be where the action is, whether at home or work. Enter an online game or tournament. You are a healthy competitor, so anyone who stands in your way better watch out. Tonight, invite friends to dinner. Aquarius, January 20th through February 18th. 4 stars. Someone might break a promise or cancel an appointment without notice. Be compassionate rather than judgmental. There may be extenuating circumstances. Make the first move to get in touch. You always know the right things to say. Tonight, sweet-smelling incense. Pisces, February 19th through March 20th, 4 stars. Strong opinions could get you in hot water. Keep provocative ideas to yourself for now and you will succeed. Show others by example how to be diplomatic and charming. You will get rewarded for your efforts. Tonight, pet love. Astrologer, Madeline Aslan.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 54 and clear. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low in the upper 50s. Then tomorrow, cloudy with a high in the upper 60s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the mid-50s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas.
Hello, this is Michael with your coronavirus update, produced Thursday, March 25th, 2021, at the Recording Library of West Texas. I'm Michael, and here are some of the articles that we'll be reading in our program this Thursday. U.S. surpasses 30 million COVID-19 cases. Biden announces new vaccine goal of 200 million shots by first 100 days in office. White House launches new program to vaccinate dialysis patients against COVID-19. The CDC is tracking a recent uptick in COVID-19 cases. Its chief says spring breakers and eased restrictions concern her. New AstraZeneca report says vaccine was 76% effective in preventing COVID-19 symptoms. One mistake after the other, how AstraZeneca went from pandemic hero to villain. India detects new double mutant variant as COVID-19 cases spike, raising fears of a second wave. Study finds mRNA COVID-19 vaccines are effective in pregnant and lactating women. Those stories and more, should we have time, are coming up in our program today. Now we'll take a look at our latest numbers. From the Texas Health and Human Services, Ector County confirmed cases, 8,523. Probable cases, 8,053. Fatalities, 349. Estimated active cases, 309. Estimated recovered, 15,918. Midland County confirmed cases, 16,852. Fatalities, 259. Estimated active cases, 260. Estimated recovered, 16,333. and for the state. From the Texas Tribune, vaccine doses administered decreased in Texas. An average of 128,265 vaccine doses were administered each day in the last week. As of March 22nd, 11.1% of Texans have been fully vaccinated. Hospitalizations decreased by 454 patients compared with a week ago. As of March 24th, 3,461 Texans are hospitalized for the coronavirus. Average new cases decreased by 752 cases compared with the 7-day average a week ago. On March 24th, 2,758 new confirmed cases and 900 new probable cases were reported. Average new deaths decreased by 21 deaths compared with the 7-day average a week ago. On March 24th, 178 new deaths were reported in Texas. Now here are coronavirus briefs and headlines. The total number of confirmed coronavirus cases in the United States is nearing the 30 million mark Thursday, as new infections continue to trend upward in a majority of states, despite an escalating vaccination campaign. Cases rose by 4% nationwide over the past week, with states such as Michigan, Colorado, and Connecticut all reporting spikes of more than 30%, according to data compiled by the Washington Post. The growing number of U.S. infections comes as cases surge around the globe. An uptick, health experts say, is because of the rapid spread of new variants of the virus. New jobless claims in the United States fell to the lowest levels of the pandemic era, according to federal data, with 684,000 claims filed last week. Pfizer begins vaccine trial for children between the ages of 5 and 11. Five U.S. states have expanded COVID-19 vaccine eligibility to anyone age 16 and older, and at least 22 more plan to do so by the end of April. Now here are some articles. U.S. surpasses 30 million COVID-19 cases, from CNN's Deanna Hackney. The United States has surpassed 30 million cases of coronavirus since the start of the pandemic, according to Johns Hopkins University's tally. As of 3 a.m. Eastern Time, at least 30,009,773 COVID-19 infections and 545,237 virus-related deaths have been reported in the U.S., per Johns Hopkins. The totals include cases from all 50 states, the District of Columbia, and other U.S. territories. Vaccines. At least 169,223,125 vaccine doses have been distributed, and at least 107,060,274 total cases administered, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention vaccine website. At least 85,472,166 people have received at least one dose of the vaccine, and at least 46,365,515 people are now fully vaccinated, the website shows. Biden announces new vaccine goal of 200 million shots by first 100 days in office, from CNN's Kevin Liptak. President Biden has announced a new coronavirus vaccine goal of 200 million shots in arms in his first 100 days in office. Biden held his first formal news conference Thursday afternoon. CNN reported on Wednesday that Biden was expected to announce his new goal at the news conference, and that he had strongly hinted he would double his original goal of 100 million shots in his first 100 days, which he cleared in 58 days. The announcement comes after Biden in recent days has consulted with his advisors and health experts on what a new realistic goal would be. The current U.S. 7-day average is about 2.5 million doses per day. That pace would get the country to more than 205 million COVID-19 vaccine doses by day 100 of Biden's presidency. White House launches new program to vaccinate dialysis patients against COVID-19, from CNN's Jacqueline Howard. The Biden administration on Thursday announced new plans to allocate COVID-19 vaccines to dialysis centers nationwide. This new partnership with dialysis clinics is in an effort to vaccinate people receiving dialysis, as well as healthcare personnel in outpatient dialysis clinics. Dr. Rochelle Walensky, director of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, applauded the partnership in a written statement released on Thursday, saying that she is proud the CDC has partnered with dialysis provider organizations to support the vaccination of most dialysis patients and healthcare personnel. This effort is another important step in making sure that vaccines reach the most medically vulnerable communities and that equity continues to anchor our efforts to end the COVID-19 pandemic, Walensky said in the statement. Dialysis is used to treat people with kidney failure, which affects more than 500,000 people in the United States, and most people go to a dialysis center for treatment. Each year, more than 550,000 people receive regular dialysis treatments through the Medicare End-Stage Renal Disease Program. The Dialysis Partners effort will onboard clinics that participate in the Medicare program to administer COVID-19 vaccines to their patients and workers, Walensky said, adding that dialysis facilities already have long-standing experience administering vaccinations such as the flu and hepatitis B shots. Walensky added that people on dialysis often have more severe outcomes when they contract COVID-19. Half require hospitalizations and 20 to 30% die, she said. Furthermore, advanced stage chronic kidney disease disproportionately affects racial and ethnic minorities, including African Americans, Hispanics, and American Indians, Alaska Natives, Walensky said. Dialysis clinics provide a trusted, innovative pathway to help COVID-19 vaccines reach populations that have been disproportionately affected by the COVID-19 pandemic. In response, the nonprofit American Kidney Fund issued a statement on Thursday applauding the White House's decision to distribute COVID-19 vaccines to dialysis centers. The American Society of Nephrology tweeted a link to the White House's announcement about the dialysis program, calling it big news. The CDC is tracking a recent uptick in COVID-19 cases. Its chief says spring breakers and eased restrictions concern her. From CNN's Christina Maxoris. Top U.S. health officials say they're encouraged by the accelerating COVID-19 vaccinations, but not enough Americans are fully vaccinated yet to suppress the spread of the virus, and eased restrictions across the country, coupled with spring break crowds, could spell trouble, the director for the Centers of Disease Control and Prevention said Wednesday. What concerns me is the footage of what's happening in spring breakers, in people who are not continuing to implement prevention strategies while we get fully scaled up, CDC Director Dr. Rochelle Walensky said during a White House COVID-19 briefing. The coming weeks are especially critical. COVID-19 cases in the country have seen a slight increase, according to Walensky, while a highly contagious and potentially more deadly variant is circulating. Some experts have warned that by getting lax with safety measures, the country could see infections surge again. And Walensky said that the latest COVID-19 data has her worried. Cases continue to increase slightly. The most recent 7-day average is nearly 55,000 per day, up about 3% from the prior 7-day average. The most recent 7-day average of new hospitalizations is about 4,600 per day and is similar to the data on Monday. And the latest 7-day average of deaths, approximately 968 per day, has also remained flat this week, Walensky said Wednesday. I continue to be worried about the latest data and the apparent stall we are seeing in the trajectory of the pandemic, Walensky said. CDC is watching these numbers very closely. New AstraZeneca report says vaccine was 76% effective in preventing COVID-19 symptoms. From CNN Health's Maggie Fox. Drug giant AstraZeneca updated its data on how well its coronavirus vaccine works, saying late Wednesday the vaccine showed 76% efficacy against symptomatic coronavirus disease and 100% efficacy against severe or critical disease or the need for hospitalization. The vaccine was 85% effective in preventing symptoms in volunteers 65 and older, the company said. The numbers are not terribly different from the data the company released in a statement Monday. On Monday, AstraZeneca said its COVID-19 vaccine showed 79% efficacy against symptomatic disease and 100% efficacy against severe disease and hospitalization. As with Monday's data, the company has released them via news release and not in a peer-reviewed report or as a formal submission for U.S. Food and the Drug Administration to review. The primary analysis is consistent with our previously released interim analysis and confirms that our COVID-19 vaccine is highly effective in adults, including those aged 65 years and older. We look forward to filing our regulatory submission for emergency use authorization in the U.S. and preparing for the rollout of millions of doses across America. Mene Pangalos, Executive Vice President for Biopharmaceuticals Research for the company, said in a statement. Concerns raised in U.S. On Tuesday, the Independent Data and Safety Monitoring Board, DSMB, that reviews data from multiple COVID-19 vaccine candidates expressed concern over AstraZeneca's announcements on its latest findings. And, unusually, the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases publicly announced those concerns. The DSMB expressed concern that AstraZeneca may have included outdated information from that trial, which may have provided an incomplete view of the efficacy data, said NAID, which has helped AstraZeneca run trials in the U.S. We urge the company to work with the DSMB to review the efficacy data and ensure the most accurate, up-to-date efficacy data be made public as quickly as possible. One mistake after the other. How AstraZeneca went from pandemic hero to villain. From CNN Business's Julia Horitz in London. After teaming up with Oxford University, AstraZeneca produced a safe and effective COVID-19 vaccine in just 9 months, a huge achievement that will help end the pandemic. But a series of missteps along the way has led to scathing criticism from policymakers and health officials, tarnishing the company's image as a hero of the coronavirus era. The Anglo-Swedish drug maker mistakenly gave some volunteers a half dose of the vaccine during clinical trials, and it has been criticized for omitting crucial information from its public statements. U.S. regulators have questioned the accuracy of its vaccine data, and severe production delays in Europe have resulted in a political firestorm and a breakdown in relations with EU leaders. What we have with the AstraZeneca company is a company that is not straightforward, that cannot be relied upon, Philip Lamberts, a Belgian member of the European Parliament, said in a radio interview with the BBC on Wednesday. AstraZeneca's failure to deliver tens of millions of promised doses to the European Union, which is struggling to roll out vaccination programs, led the bloc to impose export restrictions that have already prevented at least one shipment of vaccines to Australia. Leaders could move to make the restrictions even tighter Thursday. Meanwhile, the U.S. National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases expressed concerns earlier this week that AstraZeneca had presented outdated data from a trial of the vaccine's effectiveness. Dr. Anthony Fauci, the agency's director, called it an unforced error that could erode trust in a very good vaccine. AstraZeneca updated its data on Thursday, reporting that the trial showed its vaccine to be 76% effective in preventing COVID-19 symptoms. Earlier this week, it had said its shot was 79% effective. The rare rebuke from U.S. regulators was a major blow to the company's credibility. "They've made one mistake after the other," said Jeffrey Lazarus, head of the Health Systems Research Group at the Barcelona Institute for Global Health. India detects new double mutant variant as COVID-19 cases spike, raising fears of a second wave. From CNN's Jesse Young and Esha Mitra. India has discovered a new double mutant variant of COVID-19 as the country struggles to contain a spike in cases that's raising fears of a second wave. VOCs, voices, variants of concern, and a new double mutant variant have been found in India, the country's Ministry of Health said in a news release.